There's very little written about that period.
Well,
it's called a period of apathy.
Mm.
And I think I would have branded that way that myself.
Mm.
Until you see what happened during those 50 years,
mm.
and you realize that quite a lot did mm. take place.
Well, there's Eleanor, as a working for the State Department, while your husband was a journalist,
yes.
a correspondent, and...
Well, it was a little while afterward that I got the appointment from the State Department, but I did come over with my husband, who was... foreign correspondent for the New York Post, which is
mm.
now a defunct paper, of course,
mm.
and joined the Six Point Group. And Mrs. B.G. was a member. She wasn't, as I remembered, an officer, but she was an active member.
On the Six Point Group?
Yes. Mm. And she was, as I said, she took me under her wing. I was young and not very experienced chairman. And when she came as a speaker to my meeting, I introduced her and so on and so forth. And then afterwards, she criticized my introduction. And I thought, well, she knows what she's talking about. She's a wonderful old lady, and I better learn. I wasn't offended in the least. And when it came to the end of it, I closed the meeting, and she criticized my closing of the meeting and said, the last thing you should say is, I declare this meeting closed. And it was all, she was critical, but I was glad to have it. And it was meant to help me. I think it's almost unique in that way. Women don't criticize women openly, very usually, and I was grateful to her. She taught me a lot of other things as well. She lived right down here on 72 Belsize Park Gardens.
Did she? I didn't know that, actually. Did she?
Yeah, she lived there. Her daughter never helped her. I don't know their family life, but I never got the impression that Fiona did anything more than live at home.
She wasn't a real companion for her mother.
I don't know. But I was always thinking of the fact that Mrs. B.G. was going to write this book, and I wanted her to write that book.
You're quite right.
As a matter of fact, at one time I came home and discussed with my husband if I could subsidize a secretary, it might make it possible for her to do it. And then he felt that she was really too old to persist through a book. He was an elderly person himself. And so I didn't, but... I mean, I would have been willing to if it had been a feasible thing, but he said he thought the money would be wasted, although he wasn't against it on principle. By that time, she was too old to persist and let the house get dirty and disorderly and dusty in order to pursue this idea. She had got the point, which I've got to now, in which little things will divert me from writing. So although I urged her and talked to her about this book, she never did get it written. And of course, you know her stuff's at the Fawcett Society.
Yes, I do. What sort of book would it have been, do you think? I mean, what?
I think it would have been very critical. I think it would have been a criticism of the fact that women had not gone through the gates that had been opened to them, and that they weren't battering down gates that were still closed to them.
So it would have been a slightly disillusioned book, do you think, or what?
Not exactly disillusioned.
Critical, anyway.
It would be critical, just leave it at that.
Mm. Mm. I mean, it was...
Wait a minute, just a minute. I would have thought so, yes. She never discussed the book in detail with me. It was bemoaning the fact she couldn't get at it. Much more than it was, Hazel, what do you think that chapter 6 ought to be? None of that.
So you never actually saw any of it? I mean,
no.
Yes.
I saw her clippings, and I've been through her clippings to some extent at that time. She had a very nice way of having clippings in boxes instead of pasting them up. It's much simpler. And she had endless little boxes, all the same size, of clippings under topics, you see. And every now and again, I would ask her to refer to her box of clippings for something or other. And she would always pull out something that was pertinent. She clipped the papers very faithfully.
Did she?
Those, I would think, would be with the Fawcett Society.
Yes.
At about an inch thick.
Were they? Yes.
And with lids on them.
Yes.
And they were piled up as books.
Yes.
With the title on the spine.
And this was sort of miscellaneous information about women.
From newspapers.
Yes, it was
nothing but newspaper clippings.
Yes, I see. And you drew upon these for your own purposes, you know,
well,
now
I
and again.
Yes, I would ask her time and again about something, and she would draw on them for my benefit.
Because she did quite a lot of journalism. After she left the WSPU, she did quite a lot of journalism, and I imagine she collected things with a view to writing her articles in The Guardian and things like that.
Yes, it may be.
I don't know. But anyway...
I don't know where she kept her papers, but when she...
Lady Rhonda,
Yes. When she took over the Time and Tide, she took them down to the Time and Tide office and kept them there. And then she retired as honorary president, and she bundled them up and still kept them there. And when she died, I got on to her secretary, and her secretary was very queer to handle, but those papers disappeared. A really valuable lot. Of course, she had written her biography, Lady Rhonda. So the early formation of Six Point Group is lost. Then later on, the Second World War, Dorothy Evans was chairman, and she had an enormous pile of papers in her garage with banners and flags and everything that we used at various times. And her daughter was so anti-mother that she just got rid of the whole lot. So those disappeared. Then Sybil Morrison, who is still alive, became the chairman and kept the papers in a two-tier filing cabinet, which I have seen and used many, many times. In fact, I still have it. It was full of Six Point Group material. She resigned from the Six Point Group because she said that we'd got the boat and women didn't seem to want anything else and it was useless to work for anything. And so the feminist movement should die now. It's finished. And she threw away all the papers. And I have used the papers in that filing cabinet. So I know they existed. And when she turned the filing cabinet over to me, there were just a few papers in it like that that didn't amount to anything. So time after time after time, someone with a lack of any sense of history has destroyed the papers. People haven't got a sense of history, and yet England has a deeper sense of history than almost any other country.
Well, were you sort of the branch head or something?
I was the chairman.
Chairman of the whole
Six
Point
Group? Yes, of the whole
group.
Organization.
Were you really?
Yes.
In the early 20s, that would be, would it?
No, not in then, because that was when I just joined.
I see.
It was about 50.
It was late as that, I see.
Yes. That I became chairman. And before that, I was really chairman, but Monica Whateley was the chairman, but she was ill all the time, and I was their honorary secretary. And so all during Monica's illness, I was managing things. So it was from about 1950, roughly, to 1970 that I was heading the Six Point Group. When did Mrs. Beachy die?
Well, she died about 64 or so, yes. That sort of time, early 60s.
Yes.
But
I was going to say 62, but...
You may be right. You may well be right. Did you ask her for advice, or did she just volunteer it?
Oh, both. Both. Mm. No, I was I was very glad to get her advice. I think she volunteered it when she felt that she could. I don't know what made her volunteer it, but I think she liked me. And I think she wanted the Six Point Group to prosper. She was a very determined person.
Mm.
She wasn't afraid of God or the devil.
Mm.
There was a terrible time in which, before I became chairman, I was on the committee, when there was talk of the Six Point Group and the Married Women's Association joining forces. We had all the money, and the Married Women's Association had all the numbers. And since the Married Women's Association was originally a subcommittee of our organization, it branched off very happily, with our blessing and all, into a full-fledged organization on its own. But then everything was going badly for everybody at the time, and we were losing our membership largely because of the chairman we had at that time. But we had a lot of money, or enough money.
Mm.
And the married women had just started, and they were going ahead like a house on fire, and couldn't really be effective because they didn't have the money. So it was an obvious marriage.
Mm.
Mrs. B.G. was head of the Married Women's Association, and Phyllis Valence was the chairman of the Six Point Group. And they were like two tomcats. Dear, oh dear. Or was it? No. I really don't know whether it was Phyllis Valence or Sybil Morrison. They lived together, and they acted as one. I've forgotten which one was the chairman at that time. But the row that went on there was really terrific, mostly on constitution. How was this marriage going to take place? Who was going to do what? Where did the power lie? And who would direct the parliamentary action, and so on and so forth. And the two of them just couldn't hit it off. And so that marriage never took place. And I'm a little bit sorry to this day that it didn't, but Mrs. B.G. was adamant. She wouldn't give an inch in any direction. Phyllis Valence wasn't quite so determined, but her reaction to Mrs. B.G. was to be also determined and not to give in an inch. Oh, I've sat through some fiery sessions with those two.
How did Mrs. B.G. behave in these sessions then?
Just like the Rock of Gibraltar. She knew she was right. I don't know whether she was right or not. I don't think it's a question of right or wrong. I think it was a question of two people getting together and arguing it out.
Expediency, really, yes. I mean, just what was convenient.
Yes.
Yes.
But they were both determined not to give an inch. And I can remember the final meeting. I just walked out of that building, my head shaking. Why can't two people get together? She was determined that what she wanted was right. And on balance, she was more likely to be right than Phyllis Valence, because Phyllis Valence was a little more emotional than Mrs. B.G. But if there ever was a warrior, It was Mrs. B.G.
You see, what you're saying is absolutely what several other people have told me. I mean, everybody says this about her, that she has very good ideas and is very intelligent, but she can't work with people.
No, I don't think she could work with people very well.
Mm, mm.
I never came to the point of working with her because I was, after all, the authority, and she wanted to help me, so we never crossed, we're at cross purposes ever. But I recognized that I would go so far no further with Miss Peachy. A wonderfully strong, determined person, and absolutely sure she was right.
Yes. And what were the issues actually on this? I mean, what was she sticking out for then, roughly? I mean, it must be difficult
to remember. I'm just trying to remember what those issues were. They were all organizational issues. I can't be more concrete than that. But it wasn't that we disapproved of the Married Women's Association or anything they were doing. And it wasn't that they disapproved of what we were doing. It was a question of the Constitution, how the money would be spent, since it was all our money. Organizational things. It was not on principle.
It's very interesting, that. I mean, it's a curious
yes.
thing.
Well, she was always active with Marion Reeves. You come across that name?
I haven't come across her, no. Tell me about her.
Well, Marion Reeves took a house that I think she owned, or she may have bought with her own money, as a women's center. And it was called Minerva House.
Oh, yes. I've heard of that.
And we had, it was a place where any women's organization could have meetings. They served a sort of snack bar place, and they had rooms to let. And Mrs. B.G. was very active there. It was
sort of a club, really.
It was a club. It's the Minerva Club.
Mm.
Minerva Club.
Mm.
It's gone now.
Not
that I know of.
No.
In any case, if she had a row with Marion Reeves, she would have won, because Marion Reeves was a very docile person.
When you say she was authoritarian, what exactly do you mean? I mean, in the way she spoke? Or
well,
what?
She was always right.
Mm, just decisive, really.
Yes.
Mm, yes, yes. And these arguments about the women's, the Married Women's Association, for instance, was she sarcastic in these sharp meetings, would you say, or just sort of loud or noisy, or?
Oh no, what? She was never anything but a lady.
Mm.
I remember her getting pretty raw with Phyllis Valance and Sybil Morrison.
Just not holding back on her criticisms, really. That's
No. It was and blaming them. Well, at this day and age, well, even then, I don't know. They never could have got on together.
Yes, yes.
It's probably just as well, although Phyllis Valance died shortly after that. And one can say Mrs. B.G. was so right in her own mind all the time. She was bound to come against people who are equally right all the time. And I don't think she could ever have worked with anyone very successfully.
Why did she take you under her wing, do you think?
Being foreigner, it has its advantages sometimes. And I think she liked me, and I think she thought that the six-point group wouldn't be Americanized by me. I don't know why, but I liked her very much. I recognized I recognized her greatness, and I'm rather humble in the presence of greatness.
Yes, so that you were no threat to her at
no,
all.
No, none whatsoever.
Mm. Mm.
But she wasn't the head of anything at that time.
No.
She was just an old warrior writing a book, which she wasn't writing.
Tell me about this a bit more about this book. I mean, you just really heard about it because she kept on complaining she didn't get any help,
yes,
really.
Yes. Is that it? Yeah. Yes. It was, she had a basement flat, same as I have, and it was all that she couldn't get either a charwoman to do the work or she couldn't get a secretary to do the typing. And that was what held her back. Now, I think she was blaming those two things, because if she'd been 20 years younger, she would have let the house get dirty and the shop burn and the rest of it while she got on with what she wanted to do. I think she was sort of played out at the end.
Some of the Married Women's Association would have been. It's very difficult to see. I mean...
Well, why don't you get on to Juanita Francis now?
Well, I have talked to her.
Oh, have you?
In fact, she referred me to you.
See.
So, but she didn't. She thought you'd know more about the details of things than she remembered. You know, she was very helpful to me, but she didn't remember the details. I don't think she was the boss at that time, was she? She's only recently become of
what we call the Married Women's Committee
in the 6 points,
which was a study.
Yeah.
They were making a study of the position of the married woman. And it appeared to us at that time that it was worse than the position of any other class of women. And Juanita Francis was made the chairman of the Married Women's Committee. And the reason she was is she had just been through a row with her husband and come out the little end of the horn and really had a very hard life because of it. And then it was she who suggested that it become an organization on its own. They soon got other people to take the window dressing. Lady Summerskill, and she wasn't lady then, but Edith Summerskill, and various other people. But Juanita's been at the helm pretty much the entire time. And she retired just a couple of years ago.
So she really does know the story, but it's just that she not got a good memory, perhaps, for the details.
It would be slightly biased, because she's a person with a one-track mind. But I'm wondering if Harriet Campbell wouldn't tell you more about that row.
What was she like as a speaker, actually? I mean, you remember her speaking.
Oh, she was good.
Was she?
Oh, she's a very good speaker. She had points, and she made the points, she drove them home, and she went on to the next point, made it, her arguments, and drove it home. Oh, I think she's a very good speaker. And I didn't know her speaking when she was younger.
Did she speak from notes? I mean,
no,
when you...
No,
just entirely spontaneous?
Entirely from memory. Entirely, I imagine she drafted it out in her mind before she... it wouldn't be like her to get up there unprepared.
No.
In some way. But she certainly didn't speak from notes or anything of that kind. The last meeting that I went to where she was present, she was on the platform. And it was a sort of a farewell to her. No, it was a meeting in which they were giving Juanita Francis a gift for something or other. It may have been a birthday gift, it may have been an anniversary gift or something of the kind. And Mrs. B.G. was there. When did her husband die?
I think he died about 1960, just about 2 years before she did.
Well, he was there. And I remember he paid a tribute to his wife, talking about her blue eyes. She had the bluest eyes you ever saw. Just really piercing, wonderful blue eyes. And he was on the platform with her. That's why I can't remember why he'd be there, because he didn't usually show up. But he was on that platform at that time. And I don't think it was a meeting for Mrs. B.G. I think it was a meeting for Juanita Francis. Mrs. B.G. might have been the chairman. I don't know. I'm not very helpful, I'm afraid.
No, you are very helpful, actually. I've been getting a very good picture. They got on, as far as I could see. Say she had these piercing blue eyes and so on. I mean, what did she look like in the 1950s, you know, towards the end of her life? Was she a very impressive looking person, really?
No, not very impressive looking, but she was, she was a little taller than I am, and quite stocky. Massive in a small way, if you know what I mean.
Well-dressed?
Not particularly.
Sensible?
Well, of her age, and of the time she lived in. These were in the days in which we were very frugal. She was never badly dressed. Unostentatiously dressed.
But not interested in dress.
Not interesting. Really. No. Whimsies.
No.
Or characteristics like Joan Vickers with her purple hair.
Mm.
I don't know if you've seen Joan.
I understand your point. Yeah.
Joan's hair is white, and she had a blue rinse, a light blue rinse. Just to bring out the whiteness.
Mm. You wouldn't be a show woman, really.
Not in any way.
Just she would just be what she was.
Yes, exactly.
And say what she thought.
Yes. Her clothes were meant to keep her warm.
Precisely. What can you just explain to me who were the other suffragettes in the 6-point group? I mean, you say it was the natural continuator of the WSPU in a way, or at least of the suffragette movement.
Yes.
Who were the other suffragettes in it when you first joined then?
Well, Lady Rhonda outshone everybody else.
Yes.
Mrs. Bethick Lawrence and Fred Bethick Lawrence.
Mm. Well, there are three for you to start off with.
Monica Whateley, who didn't quite achieve greatness.
She seems to have been a strange character, as far as I can gather. I mean,
well, I'll tell you why she didn't achieve greatness, because she belonged to every organization that was going. And I remember she was complaining to me one time that she was tired, she'd been out to so many meetings. And I said, Monica, if you belong to everything and go to all their meetings, you're bound to be tired. And she said, well, I only sit on 13 committees. She was on the pro-blacks and the Irish, the Catholic things, and she was against abortion, and she was National Council of Civil Liberties. Mm. She was everything.
Mm.
And, against South Africa. I don't know any liberal movement that Monica didn't jump into, and she splashed her talents. She's a very vivid person.
Mm. She used to wear a cloak, didn't she?
A black dress and a big black cloak.
Mm.
It was black lining for every day. It was a red satin lining for evening. And she was always, she had a lot of pure white hair, and this black outfit and their white hair, and a very pale face, but not pale from, not an unhealthy pale, it was a natural pale.
Mm.
She was quite a distinguished looking person.
Mm.
And histrionic. So I think she just missed greatness, Monica.
Mm. Mm. And then
some people have to miss it.
Oh, yes, otherwise
others,
yes,
that don't.
Yes, it's comforting for us all that some people do. Mrs. Pellick Lawrence, was she very active in it, really?
She was very active at one time, but latterly, I've forgotten when she died, too.
About 1956, that's what
you remember all these days.
Well, roughly, I mean, not exactly.
Are you getting a PhD on this?
She was quite active in the early years, anyway.
Well, and she was very, shall we say, we loaned her name in the later years. Both she and her husband always made it possible for us to give parties in the House of Lords. And we had Sherabang tours to her house in the country and things like that, but she didn't do active work. It's about as much as she could do at that time to receive guests.
She was a bit deaf, wasn't she, towards the end of her life? Or later in life?
Yes, it was a little hard to get things over to her. She's a little like Mrs. Corbett Ashby in general. It's a little hard to get things over to Mrs. Corbett Ashby now. People conceal their deafness. I'm beginning to do it too.
Fred, I mean, he seems a rather cold character.
Oh, he was very good. Mm. He may have been personally cold, but he always did everything we asked him to do. And he always approved of what we were doing. I didn't come in contact with him so much except for these parties that I would have to make the arrangements, and the arrangements were always made through him.
Mm.
Because the parties are never given, the privileges of the House of Lords are never given to the organizations. They're always given to the man or the woman.
Of course, yes.
And they are responsible, and then the organization is responsible to the
individual. Mm.
So my relationship with him was purely on that basis.
Mm. Mm.
That was a strained relationship. I never had any part of it, and part of my value in the six-point group, and I may say in English feminist circles, has been that being an American, I'm above the petty frictions that existed between all of these organizations. I didn't have any part of them, no part in their past history. Now, Mrs. Fawcett and the Pankers and the Patty Lawrences and Lady Rhonda and all were at Dagger's Heads. And that went down. That was inherited after Millicent Fawcett was dead and buried. It was carried on by the people who succeeded her. And there was always a friction, which I had no part of. I was unconscious of it for a long time. I just treated them all as perfectly neutral to emphasize this. There was some sort of a meeting at one time of representatives of organizations, and I went representing Six Point Group, and Miss Horton, went representing the Fawcett Society. And I came out of the meeting talking with Miss Horton perfectly cordially, perfectly neutrally, just another woman interested in the same things I was interested in. And I passed several people. The next time I saw one of these women whom I passed, she said, "That is something I never thought I would see. Ruth Horton and Hazel Hunkins Allman coming out of a meeting arm in arm." Well,
because you were just in separate, or
I didn't take any notice of it. I don't know the cause of it. To this day, I don't know the cause of it. But I suppose it's the same thing that we had in America against the National Association of Women Suffragists and the National Woman's Party. One was militant and the other was less militant. Believed in the same thing, but different methods and different personalities. I imagine it was no different. That's sort
right.
of a typical or a typical situation.
Mm.
But anyway, I don't know the reason for it, but it always existed. It does not exist now. A lot of our members belong to the Fawcett Society. A lot of the Fawcett Society people belong to us. And as Mary Stocks always holds forth, is that we ought to amalgamate. I think, again, it would be hard to amalgamate because they have their set of offices. It's like expecting the Kurds, the Serbs, and the Croats to get together, you know.
They have, everyone has an interest in independence.
Yes, we all have our little empires, and it's just a little difficult getting.
I understand, yes.
But anyhow, I've cooperated with the Fawcett Society innumerable times, and they with us. I get all of their information, although I don't personally belong. I can't belong to everything. It costs too much. Can I get you a cup of tea?
Does Teresa Billington Gregg fit into any of these antagonisms at all? Was she affected by them?
No. I think that she was out of the mainstream by the time I came into the mainstream. And so if she was affected by them, I wouldn't know about it.
Mm. She's certainly not in the centre of London, suffragette activity or whatever. No. Did she?
Oh, she was a member. She was one of our vice presidents.
Oh, she also fitted in with you, did she?
Yes.
Yes, I didn't realise that.
Oh,
so
yes.
She's another
did,
American bridge, in a way, isn't she, across these organisations,
yes,
like you?
Well, Lady Astor always gave us £5 a year.
Which was a lot of money in those days, of course. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, I don't know as it did at the very end, but when we sent out our January newsletter asking for contributions as well as subscriptions, always got back £5.
Mm.
And I don't think we used her. I say used her, you know what I mean. We did, asking her to do things for us all the time. I don't think she ever gave us a party in the House of Lords. I don't remember her doing anything sort of useful like that. I'd have to go back over files to... I don't remember now. She may have done so.
Did
but
you,
there was no particular antagonism.
No, you see, it seems to me she comes out from outside in the same way as you do, really.
Yes.
And she's not involved in these...
Yes, she's...
activities.
I've often thought that I was more useful in my position than an English woman of even more talents would have been.
Yes. Did you ever actually go to any of her parties in the House of Commons? I mean, she...
Oh,
well,
yes.
She used to give parties in the 1920s, didn't she? Which were very influential, weren't
yes.
they? Very important.
Yes. And she always told the same story. She was very repetitive.
And why were these parties so important? It's a thing I can't understand now.
Well, I didn't always approve of those parties because I thought the energy that was used up in getting them and the postage and the time and all could have been better used in political action. But it was very hard at certain times in the 30s and after the war as well to get political action. It was a period of apathy to a certain extent, and to hold the organization together they would have parties. They would exchange views. They weren't going out and creating new members or promoting new ideas. They were getting the old people together. I don't mean old people, I mean the converted.
Existing members, yes.
The converted together. Mm. And they held the organizations together, largely by these parties.
Mm.
We held the six-point group together through many hard times with parties at the House of Lords. It was almost an annual event in which Pethick Lawrence arranged several of these. I think if you're working hard politically, you haven't got time for these social things. But when you're losing your membership because you don't do anything or you can't do anything, they do hold your membership together.
They're sort of substitute for action.
Yes, they're substitute for action.
Mm. Mm. Yes, that's interesting.
That. The vote was a unique principle to work for. It helped everybody. conservatives, labor, liberal, everybody. It was a symbol. And also it was the first thing you had to get. So that if you were any kind of a feminist at all, you would want the vote. After they got the vote, they began to, Lady Rhonda's idea anyway, was to organize women so they would use the vote to get certain things. And she had a committee of people originally, the way she organized the organization in the first place was to get a committee of people together and say, what do we want? We've got the vote now, we've got the instrument. What are we going to do with it? And they decided on six things that they wanted to work for, and that's how their name Six-Point Group arose. There were six things that they wanted.
These were things
like pay for men and women in the civil service, equal pay for men and women in schools, teachers, equal guardianship of children, satisfactory legislation on child assault. That's only four.
They're all various aspects of women's rights.
Various
in a broader
aspects
sense.
Of women's rights and human rights.
Mm.
I mean, the laws on child assault were almost non-existent at that time. No, they were the things that women were and should rightly be interested in. And those were the things that they started working for. Now, there were a lot of people who thought that, National Association for Against Cruelty to Animals was more important. I mean, after they had got this one big, solid chunk, their interests were diversified. And there were people who were just as dedicated to other causes, which had nothing to do with women.
Yes, I'm sure you're right about that. I mean,
dissipation of women's energies. And also, no great leader arose. You know, in the Conservative Party up until now, the leader emerged. Well, no great leader emerged, like Mrs. Pankhurst or Christabel.
I wonder why that was. I mean, were there any possibles? You see, Mrs. Billington Gregg could never have done it, could she? Because
no,
she wasn't
I don't
the right
think she could.
Type of person.
She could have been a wonderful foreign secretary in a cabinet, but she was never the prime minister. She could never have been the prime minister. But Mrs. Pankhurst was a vivid, fanatical, dynamic person, although she was tiny.
You saw her, you met her, didn't
yes.
you?
Yes. Well, no, I never did. Mm. No, I'm supposed to have met her. She was alive, but I actually, to be perfectly honest, I don't ever remember seeing her. Christabel had other ideas. Who were some of the other people?
Well, there was Eleanor Rathbone, but she went into Parliament.
Yes, she went into politics.
Yes.
Yes, there were a lot of people, and Margaret MacDonald, or whatever her name was, Ramsay's first wife.
Yes, yes. Well, she died early. She died in 1910, quite
early,
actually.
Oh, not as early as that.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Who worked so hard and really sacrificed their health and their time and everything to getting the vote, were almost too tired to get into another campaign and sustain it.
Yes, Lady Astor in a way fits the position, doesn't she? But
well, yes, but she never was a feminist from the Simon Pure feminist, we say.
She was a bit of a careerist, wasn't she?
She was a careerist, and she never would have got into Parliament if she had her husband hadn't gone to the House of Lords. House of Lords, and she took his seat. It's the first time that a woman had taken her husband's seat.
Yes, then Mrs. Winterham did it, didn't she?
But they've been doing it constantly since then. And when you come right down to it, the only leader we've got now is Nancy Sear, and she's a bit overworked.
Yes. Did you feel an atmosphere of disappointment in the women's movement, say, by the 1930s, 1940s? I mean, presumably people were much busy, very busy, fighting Hitler and things like that.
Yes.
I mean,
not that time.
Mm.
They were getting over the war.
Mm.
I was disgusted. Why? Women should have revolted at that time because they never in the world could have won the 1914 war without the women doing the factory work. And Lloyd George said homes fit for heroes, and so all the women had to leave the factories and the men went back to their jobs, and the women became housefraus again. Well, that was the time for them to have revolted. I don't know whether the revolt could have been successful. I don't know anything about it, but the women were brushed aside. They were put down. They were denigrated in every way to repay the men who returned from the war. And it just wasn't women's time. And they all had babies. It's just...
It never really took off from the first point.
Never really took off after getting the vote.
Because, see, one of the interesting things...
But being the daughter of her father and being in the political world, she came up afterwards. And I think that she's almost the only leader there was at that time. And the six-point group was really quite a magnificent organization early on. They had... thousands of members.
What did they actually do, Mrs. Hunkinson? I mean,
well, the first thing they did was to get the Bishop of London to, this is history, I don't know anything about it. That's the time when I was a tea girl. the Bishop of London introduced a law on child assault, and they got an amendment to the law of child assault 2 years after they were formed. In 1926, they got the first bill on equal partnership of parents, equal partnership.
Guardianship of children.
Yes. Equal guardianship of children. Of course, that law was never came to pass because the House of Lords said no law of Parliament superseded the common law, and in common law, the husband was the head of the family, and his power was not to be abated by a mere act of parliament. So it didn't do any good, but we did get it through. Then they started equal pay for men, women, children, men, women, teachers. She was honorary secretary or chairman, I think it was honorary secretary with a figurehead for chairman. Of the National Union of Women Teachers. And in, I think it was 57, 56, 58, somewhere in the 50s, that they passed a law for the equal pay of men and women teachers in seven stages. But they had got equal pay on principle. And so she said National Union of Women Teachers was formed to get equal pay for men and women teachers. We've got it. And there's no further use for the National Union. And almost single-handedly, she dissolved the organization. Well, all right. They had a huge membership, a well-run, Miss Baratti's a very competent woman. They had all sorts of things to do. There were no women heads. There were all sorts of problems coming up. Even now, the comprehensive schools.
They should have followed it up,
they
in other words,
followed
by keeping
it
in existence.
They should have changed their constitution or their aims to continue working for the equal opportunity, not necessarily equal pay, they'd got that, although they could have followed that up too, but equal opportunity for women teachers. Mm. That organization has dropped out of existence. Miss Baratti hasn't done a stroke of work since.
No, she lives in Hook Norton, in managing a meeting, and that's
yes.
Like, yes.
Oh, she could catch up the best of them.
Could she?
And push her point home.
Interesting.
No, she's very competent, and Robert's Rules of Order, I think she knows it backwards.
You say the six-point group did all these things in Parliament. How did they do them? Did they...
Lobbying, mainly.
Yes, I mean, how did you keep your thousands of members together, really? I mean...
Well, we had meetings. That that is, I was a member, but I can't say that my memory is very, the memories I have, I think, are accurate. But I haven't a great many memories about that early period. There were a lot of meetings. We had offices on Victoria, and we had meetings all over the country, really.
It was an organization with branches everywhere, was
Not
it?
Branches, but cells, call them.
I see, you mean so individual much. Points of contact.
Yes,
I see.
That's the way we still operate. Although we do have a big branch in near Manchester, the Northwest branch, we call it. Very active group of young married women, and they really do more work than we do here in London.
Non-militants.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
What you say? She was a pioneer typist.